Whenever you have something that creates a lot of restriction in your life, and after having a life with very little restriction, I think you either get depressed, which I've also been there, or you find truth. And that truth keeps you clear and centered.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion, and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools, and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion, and purpose. So what was life like for you growing up? In conversation with my guest this week, I was reminded of my teenage years. My parents came from simple beginnings. My mother was from the East End of London. My American friends, that would have been a very impoverished area and was bombed heavily during the war. My grandfather was a piano tuner, and he did many things, and not all of them were legal. My father was born further up the country in the Midlands in a place called Leeds, and his father was a barber. Now, both of my parents did not have an understanding of the commercial world. Dad did a technical job for the local government, and Mum did a range of jobs around childcare. So commercialisation was neither something important or relevant. I can remember in my teens buying a bicycle from one of my mother's friends. It was not a right choice for me, it was far too big. But they sold it to me at a very good price. So I looked to sell this bike on in just a few weeks, but I wasn't allowed to sell it for any more than the price I had paid for it. Now at the time I was really pissed about it. But they were adamant that it was not fair on the family who I'd bought it from. So it's funny how these memories get triggered, isn't it? I'd forgotten about that story, and it must have been over 40 years ago. So my guest this week is Yvette Owo. And she had no such resistance to commercialisation in her family. When she was 10 years old, during the summer break, she started 5 different businesses. She was creating ideas and trying things out and seeing what would sell. And yes, she did have a lemonade stand, but she found the return on investment was not good enough. What is fascinating about Yvette Owo is that she is goal-orientated. Setting goals really work for her. She is diligent in her process, and she creates clear, structured plans to achieve her goals. Business for her is a pleasure. So while working full-time, she built a brand around personal finance. She was doing speaking gigs, presenting this brand all over the country, and looking to go full-time when disaster struck. She was hit by a car, and it changed her life. Following from the accident, she developed a debilitating disease. It forced her to learn the hard way the value of financial and time freedom. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Yvette Owo. Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. And I am delighted today to be here with Yvette Owo. What a great name. Sounds so exciting and fun. I am so delighted today to have Yvette on the show today. So Yvette helps business owners massively grow their businesses while having more fun and fulfillment at the same time. That has got to be a recipe for excitement, hasn't it? So, Yvette, how did you get to this place in your life? How did you get here? What's the story, and where's the passion? And where's the passion in all of this?
So the story behind this is kind of interesting. The truth is, I've always enjoyed business and helping businesses grow. When I was 10, it's summer between third and fourth grade, I started 5 businesses that summer. until my parents told me I was no longer allowed to sell anything to anyone door to door.
You were 10 and selling stuff. Was this lemonade stands and things?
Well, actually, I did a lemonade stand. And at 10, I thought the ROI was terrible. It's hot. it's sunny. Everyone's in a car. And it's stupid. So I actually did one. I thought it was stupid. And so one of the things I also did was a cookie business. And that one's really funny because my mom liked the idea of me making cookies because she thought it was girly. And I liked, because I wanted to sell these cookies, but I didn't want to buy any cookies or make any cookies. So I was like, Mom, I'm going to make some cookies. So she was like, great. So she went and she paid for the cookies. We made them together. If you can't see me, my hands are in quotes. I don't remember doing a lot of the making. And they were the ones that you could, you know, basically pre-made, you cut them up. And I went door to door. I was no longer allowed. I took orders. I wrote down on a sheet of paper. For a little kid, I was pretty organized. Unfortunately, somewhere along the baking process, I lost the sheet of paper. Ah. Now here's the winner. I realized that it doesn't matter because I was cute and I was 10. So I just went back to people's doors and there were like three types and I would have all three types on a plate and I would say, here you go. You want the cookies you ordered? And whatever they decided was what I charged them for. So I laugh now. You guys are going to hear I curse sometimes when I'm having a good time, but honestly, never thought about this shit before until 2017 was when I went all in to helping entrepreneurs grow their businesses with some really killer strategies.
Hang on a minute. You can't go from 10 to 2017. There's a gap in there somewhere.
Yes, I'm going to go back. Okay, so let's just tell you, the story is not being told necessarily in chronological order. It's being told in emotional order.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll deal with emotional order then.
So that'll we'll go fun. Back. We'll circle yeah. back. But it just, the process of going all into my business, and I recommend that whatever you love in life, like whether it's business, whether it's your children, whether you want to go to the Olympics, whatever you want to do in life, like go fucking do it. Like I learned so much about myself by doing the thing that I have always wanted to do. And the reason I started with the story of when I was 10 is I never realized that this was that important to me. Like I never told anyone about that summer until 2017, because then I was like, okay, so when you start a business, you have doubts. People around you are used to doing something else. So when you change, a bunch of people around you are always going to say, like, that's a terrible idea. Don't do it. That's just how life is. My parents were about as supportive when I was 10 as they were in 2017. So I had a lot of resistance. And I don't think I was unique in having a lot of resistance. I think when you change, everyone does. And then you'll find out that I had some particular health issues that cause even more resistance. But the point, so in 2017, I really had to dig deep and say, like, why is it that I'm so excited about this? Why is it that I'm so committed? Why do I love this so much? And when I was telling someone, and then I told that story, and they were like, literally, you're a born entrepreneur. Like, I don't know what I did. And so that was what I did for fun. I did not need the money. I saved every dollar I ever got. Mm-hmm. I actually saved every dollar. And then I ended up, we're taking a family trip. My parents asked for the money in my piggy bank. I wrote them a contract with interest, contractually with interest, that's 10 years. So it wasn't that I wanted the money. I just actually enjoyed the process of coming up with an idea and then being able to sell it to someone. Like at that, I genuinely enjoyed it at such a deep level that this was something that I did just because I had nothing to do and it was what I considered fun. So the process of starting my own business got me so connected to myself. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say, I don't care what your thing is. Like it literally could be being a mommy. It could be ballet. It could be basketball. It could be business. It could be collecting stamps. Like, I don't know, but whatever it is, go all in because you will learn to love yourself more than you ever will doing anything else at any point in your life.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah.
And some people miss that opportunity. My wife always made dolls' houses out of cardboard and houses as a child. Yeah. And she would have loved to have been an architect, but she never had the kind of education or the process to go that way. Yeah. And it's quite a long journey being an architect. Yes. And I don't think she's got even now, but she still loves designing and building.
Yeah, and being able to find that. I mean,
yeah, and so she discovered Sims 4, and she builds amazing Sims 4. And he said, and it's so much easier than doing it for real, because I just put a wall there, I don't like it, I can take it down again.
Oh my God, that was probably a few misspent teenage years lost to the Sims. 1 and 2. But yeah, I mean, like, just finding, I don't know, it just, honestly, it's really just so amazing, because when things are hard and I'm like, why do I still want to do this? It's because I love it. And people are like, couldn't you do this? Isn't this easier? No, it's actually just easier to be yourself than to be somebody else.
So, okay. So what were the 5 businesses that you did in that summer and you were stopped? What were the other 3?
Okay. Yeah. They weren't all as impressive as, those are the 2 best examples. I did the lemonade stand. That was the first one. The other ones, and these will connect to my creativity, is I'm actually a creative, and business was the first area. So I keep saying business. So just to give you guys some context, before I went into my own business, I did corporate strategy. So before I even graduated from college, I was doing strategy for organizations. Like, how do you massively grow? So I've helped Shell oil company save $300 million. I launched the first TV app on Verizon. It had 1.6 million downloads, when it was previously estimated to have 2,300, and I took it to 1.6 million first, and I had never done anything like that before. Mm. So I have a track record of put me in a business situation and I'll create this massive outcome and I'll organize a team around it, regardless of having no real experience or kind of experience. And like, you know, I was working with like Harvard type kids. So it was serious business, right? Mm. And I started doing that kind of stuff before I even graduated from college. And so I just had a natural affinity for it. And it allowed me to really play with my creativity. And so that's the kind of stuff that I love doing. Another thing I did that summer was I would watch Muppet Babies. And you guys know that. And this is the last example from the summer. But this one's funny. It's the one with Kermit. And do you know the cartoon I'm talking about? It's
like a cartoon. I know the Muppets.
Muppets. Yeah, that's it. The Muppets. And so I would watch that. And here's the thing. I don't know any other kid who did this. So normally you watch it and you're like, oh, this is fun. But they would like invent things on the show. Like, they wouldn't be like an inventor, like hardcore engineering inventing, but they would just like, I mean, it's a kid's show. So they would put things together and it would be a slide, or I can't remember, I haven't seen it in so long. But they would basically put things together and they would magically work because it's a children's show.
Yeah.
So afterwards, Yvette, who is not hands-on, like what I consider hands-on that I do in my life now is the dishes, and I don't do that very often. So I'm not like the engineer type. That was back when Microsoft were like 3.0. I would go to Microsoft Draw and I would try to draw something, because then, cause again, I'm a 10-year-old, so I'm not super practical. Although I did figure out the ROI on the lemonade stand was shit. I would try to draw something and then see if I could invent it and sell it. So, and I would do this every time I watched the show.
Oh, okay.
I never once invented anything. I actually don't like drawing. And I don't like inventing. Like practical things. So it really says that I was naturally bent on this idea of let's create something new.
Yeah,
and then sell it to someone, and to the point that although I now know that my creative space is ideas and words, not tactical things, I was so into creating that I managed to do this almost every week. I never got discouraged. I don't even think I really noticed the fact that barely anything came out of it. It was just fun. I watched the show. I got excited. I go upstairs.
So clearly this is your passion. This idea of entrepreneurship was always a passion for you.
It was. And I had so I didn't, yes, it was. And I always, and there was different types of resistance. I was supposed to go to law school. So when I decided not to go to law school, that was a big deal. And then when I got into business, I did strategy at the largest consulting company in the world, had a global career. But even while I was there, I had side businesses. I had a resume editing company, I had an Airbnb, I had a rental company. So, and then I talked to my coworkers and I'm like, hey, you know, do you guys do any of this stuff? And they kind of looked at me like, what the fuck are you talking about? We're tired after work. and they're like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I get a paycheck, why would I go do a business? And for me, it wasn't like I did them for the money. It just made sense, you know? I did want financial freedom for sure, But I didn't even, my financial freedom goals weren't even that high. Like every time I set a goal, I create a spreadsheet showing how long it would take me to get there. And every single time I realized I would get there. So I kept raising the goal and raising the goal. And then I realized the only goals I couldn't hit would be if I was an entrepreneur. And it was also the thing that I'd always wanted to do. So anyway, 2011, I was really passionate about educating people about personal finance. And I started a business doing that, financial planning. So I was, I was doing a lot of education, even at work. Like I was doing these educational lunch series. So I built a brand. I was writing blogs. So I built a brand around it. And I thought about leaving. And my passion was helping middle-class people with finances, personal finance. And I got hit by a car.
Oh.
And was unconscious. Went to the ER, and then was on crutches, had a neck brace, a wrist brace, tried to go back to work the next week. That was pretty terrible.
You had to go back to work?
I tried to go back to work.
Oh, you tried to go back to work?
Well, I mean, I did. I went back on reduced hours. I don't know if it was a week or at some point I went back.
Wow.
The point was, I mean, I couldn't breathe without pain. That's how bad it was. Like if I was in pain asleep. And then I went on disability for a few months, short-term disability. That's what it's called in the U.S. when you're out for 3 months. I think I cried every single day of that period. And then I went back to work and because they stopped paying you after 3 months. And then, so if you listen to this and you don't live in the U.S. and you live in a first world country, you have really good healthcare. Be really happy. Everything I'm telling you would be very different in your country. that was the commercial. So, and not all companies have, it was because I was in a really large company. So if I was in a really small company, actually the only thing I could do was just leave my job and go lay on my mom's couch, which is its own story of trauma. So I didn't do that. I cried every day. I went back to work and that was the first time I felt like I had a job because I wanted to be home in bed and I was going to work for the money. And every day I'd worked before that, probably been working about 3-4 years. I had how the people were like, oh, I just got to go to work. It's a job. I had never had that feeling before. And that was the day I knew what it was like to have a job. And so I went back. I proceeded to launch a $1.6 million app with Verizon. I did a lot of great things in my career. And I tried to make all these adjustments with my health, but it just, honestly, I ended up developing fibromyalgia. And the truth of the matter is a part of it, And I'll tell you this, I actually, my coworkers don't know or like this, but I did stuff like twice as fast as the rest of them. So part of the reason I was able to do it is somebody else was working 80 hours. I was probably doing the same thing in 40.
Right.
So, and I just, I mean, because there were periods there where I had to sleep 11 hours a day. The $300 million cost reduction for Shell, for most of that time period, I slept 10 to 11 hours every single day.
Wow.
So, not every time, not every day, but almost every day. So I found the balance, and this is the part that's not as fun to listen to, but yeah, those are some really difficult years because physically my body was struggling. I was doing something I liked, but not loved. I liked business, but not the context of what I was doing. I really wanted to be an entrepreneur and I thought I wanted to be an entrepreneur around personal finance. And then when I did that, I realized I really like helping people with that. But it doesn't have the excitement that I want. What I really want is.
Well, you're managing something which is finite, aren't you? Because they're not necessarily aggressively growing it. So you're making do, whereas going into a business where you're making better, it's much more exciting.
This man just hit the nail on the fucking head. And for most, personal finance is like working out and brushing your teeth. There are basic habits that you must repeat day in and day out. Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah.
Wealth creation, on the other hand, there's a lot of ups and downs of business. there's like 10,000 habits. And then a habit works and then you get to a new phase of growth. Then you got to redo it. I mean, it's crazy.
New levels, new devils.
Say it again.
New levels, new devils.
Exactly.
That's not my phrase. It's kind of... Oh, what's his name now? Oh, it's Tager. A friend of mine, Tager, that's the one he says. Oh, new levels, new devils is what he always says.
It is. And it's also the people are crazy. I mean, there's two ways to see all the craziness of humanity. Go on an online dating app or post a job application.
I'm a bit old for online dating apps, that's for sure.
I'm just telling you, if you want to see how crazy people are, I think those are the two best ways to see them. You post a job and you have people say that, I mean, I, one woman was going through a trial process and she had to create her own Gmail account. It's not that hard. She asked me for help creating a Gmail account. And okay. She didn't understand why she wasn't moving forward.
Hmm. Okay. So obviously you've had the journey here and you've successfully moved away from work into your own business, and because of, you were driven there, you know.
Yes.
And it doesn't sound like you've ever lost your passion for it to me. You've always had it, and it's just part of you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's been about uncovering it. And I would say every day I'm more clear. Today I'm more clear than I was last month. More clear than I am last year of what even that means. Mm. Because even when you have a big vision and you're passionate, I mean, so I really love helping women. And when I first started my own business, everybody was like, oh, so your business just helps women. And the answer was no, but eventually I started saying yes, because I thought it was good branding. But in my head, I was like, oh, I'd always like to have some men that I'm working with. Like one, I mean, on my team where I hire, it's mixed gender, but I like to be in mixed gender environments. And even the journey of that, realizing like when I say I love helping women and I care about women, most people think that means I only want to help women. I'm not going to be able to change everyone's perception of those words because that's what they think and feel. But I know that what that means for me is I recognize the fact that, and you know, women are more than 50% of all the births in the world. Just scientifically, the sperm that makes, because it's male sperm that chooses if you're a man or woman, and it swims faster. The women's one swims faster. So that's why there are more female babies. But because of people killing girl children, there are actually more men now. And obviously India and China are a lot of that because they're the biggest populations in the world. And then you go into, if you look at most of the world, most of the world, women aren't encouraged to have an education to go to work.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just statistically speaking, if I wanted to make a huge impact on the world, if I'm focusing on the underserved 50%, I'm going to be able to make a massive impact on the world. Mm. Now, I'm a woman of color. So do I also understand that being black and being white is a woman different? Hell yeah. I also actually have a disability. My body is now legally disabled. So I understand that either. So do I care about all these different areas? Yes, I do. And I recognize that 50% of the world really is just told that you're not meant to do anything with yourself.
Yes, we've got a long way to go yet, haven't we?
Yeah. So, but to go back to that.
I mean, I saw the famous picture in your country a couple of months ago of that meeting at and it had a room full of men discussing women's fertility.
Yeah, I
and it's like, hang on a minute, it's a room full of, they're discussing women's fertility, it was a room full of men. I'm going, hang on a minute.
it's crazy. And I would say that, you know, US is a first world country. So in the grand scheme of things, women have more rights here than most other places. But frankly, I would say really Northern Europe, if you want the most rights, go to Scandinavia.
the Nordic countries do actually have a very well balanced attitude around this. They really do. They have a bad attitude about a lot of things that we ought to be looking at.
Yeah. I want to spend some time. I'm planning to live in Sweden for a month next year. That's a big part of it.
So. I mean, the other thing about the Swedish that those countries is it's quite hard as an outsider to be involved in them. You're Swedish or you're Danish or the outsiders are not really part of it. But that's just the way it is. It's just
They're super.
And the language is difficult. So that's part of it, really.
Well, they mostly all speak English because they have to learn it in school. Yeah. But I think the outsiders thing is very common. Like they're small countries. Mm. They know their like they literally make friends in elementary school and they have their family and they know these same people when they're 30, 40, 50, so they're not looking for you.
Yeah, and that's like they have a happy life. Happiness is part of their structure.
Exactly. So they're not as needy. Like in the US, I mean, you've got families that aren't broken, people are moving for work. Mm. You know, we have a two-parent income, but no normal child care. So we have a lot of need for, like, you need a new friend on a regular basis, and your old one probably moved. So, you know, and it's a big country. It's not like You can drive from one end to the Netherlands in 2.5 hours.
I know.
So if your friend moves halfway across the country, you can still see him once a week.
I know. Yeah, I've had a couple of podcast guests that say, well, you can drive across our state and keep going for 6 hours and it'll take you most of that. You just keep going and you can
six
keep
hours,
going.
You can drive across my last state for 24 hours.
Okay, well, that's what they're saying. Yeah, that's right. You can keep going. Yeah, yeah. It is a massive country. It is massive. So obviously you serve women and there's a good reason for doing so. And I have to say, I tend to serve women as well. And I have similar reasons. But my reasons is that the reason I serve women more than not. Is it more than it? It's not. It just happened that way, and I think it's because I communicate well with women. I allow them that process, whereas I don't. How can I put? I'm trying to find out how to put this into words properly. Really, when I have conversations with men about the work that I do, there tends to be a bit of one-upmanship about it. Men yes. tend not to like the idea of another guy giving them advice unless they are really satisfied. So there's this. Jockeying position.
Well, you know, I actually have a coach. So we have a team of coaches in my company. And one of the guys, he actually says that. So when we have a client, if a client's really alpha and it's about to get real tense, he'll actually recommend that a woman come in because he's an alpha too. And so he's like, look, this client's an alpha, so they're going to want to one-up me. And he's like, I'm a well-balanced, well-developed man, but I'm an alpha too. So I don't think that this is the best situation.
Well, really in my subject, I'm alpha, as far as I'm concerned. If I'm trying to help someone do something, you've got me here because I'm supposed to know what I'm doing.
Well, yeah, and that's something that, and so I agree with you that can create a tension. And it's not even just the knowledge; it's more of a perspective. Like, so, for example, in the work world, I work with so many guys who are alphas, but most guys will never consider a woman an alpha on their level. They consistently underestimate you. So it's very common for me to work with a guy. We're peers, and I ask for advice because I just take advice. That's one of my strengths is I'm able to take ideas from many people and incorporate them faster than anyone I've ever met. And so they assume me asking for advice means I don't know or I'm not as smart or something. And no, it just means I value advice and I think you have some value to add. And then I'll get promoted faster than them or my business will go faster. And then they were like, oh no, but she's not as smart as me, or she's junior, or she's the person I take care of. And then they turn around and they're like, fuck, she's my boss. And it's happened enough times and I'm just kind of like, you know, there's even a book on it. It's not in the background, but there's a book about alpha men. And it's one of the things, they don't consider women equal. So you know what? It means they're going to say some things that are a little annoying, a little disrespectful. But at the end of the day, as long as I know that and I'm still doing what I need to do, I feel like I win, and there was never a competition, and you never noticed it. And you never will notice it because you know.
From my perspective, the woman in front of me tends to know more about a lot of things than I do. And I have areas of expertise, and so does everybody else. And we can all learn something, can't we?
Yeah. But, you know, there is something there about, you know, like you said, about two men together. Anyway, so it's just, it is what it is. And,
So you've obviously gone forward. You've created this business. So So I guess we need to talk about your success model, because there must be some determination for success. I mean, yeah, you didn't need the money when you were a child with these businesses. You did it for something else. So clearly, while money is important, it's not a major motivator.
Yeah, I wish sometimes it. Yeah, it's an important motivator, but.
When there's not enough, it's always important.
Yeah. Oh no, because even when I have a lot, I want more, because I have really big goals. Like, I want to donate $1 billion.
Oh wow. Okay.
You can't donate money you don't have.
No, you can't.
I mean, real talk, I want to be richer than Oprah. And Oprah and Robert Smith, they donated the largest amount of money to the African American History Museum in the US, and I want to top them. I think the best gift that I can give to them, if that's what I'm meant to do in the world, is be able to give more and literally personally hand them, write the letter and call them and say, because you did this, I had the commitment to do more. Thank you. So that is why I say it's important, because there are things that you can do in the world and you can either ask for it or you can write the check. But it's not things. There are things in the world that will not get done unless somebody writes the check.
Yeah, that's very true. So you said, your success model. What is the success model?
My success model is really that I really want to help people. So even before, so that summer was, I was a pretty smart elementary school student, now that I think about it. So that was my 10th grade summer. The 9th grade summer, I decided that I was going to help hundreds of thousands of people like Martin Luther King and Oprah put together.
Okay.
Because I was like, Oprah's a good communicator. She can communicate to the entire world. I want to do that too. So I decided I was going to be a good communicator at that age. Mm. And she was my model with the idea that she can communicate to the world. Mm. And then I guess I learned about Martin Luther King and what he did. And I was like, great, I want to help people like that. And so that's always been my burning driver in terms of how I choose and why, instead of saying, hey, I want to do finance and just make money, like that's the driver. And then for me, business is just a vehicle. You know, some people can help by painting, art. Some people help in different ways. It happens to be the thing that I like to do, and mm-hmm. the world also needs it. And so it's how do I, you know, help hundreds of thousands of people while being a good communicator, doing this thing that I really love. And so that's what it's always got back to me. It's like, what do I love? And how can I do more of the thing that I love? And it just juices me up, and I'm uber competitive, like really fucking competitive.
I must admit, I guess you might be competitive.
Oh yeah, I'm on my own. Like it took me to realize how competitive I am, but I'm very open about it. Like if we're on a team, say we're in a workshop and we're on a team, and our team is terrible, and I'm pretty sure our team's gonna lose. I'm so competitive, but I enjoy the spirit of it. So I'm like, come on guys, we got this, we're gonna lose, and I'll talk trash. I may know that we're gonna lose. It doesn't matter, we're gonna lose anyway. We might as well enjoy the ride.
You might as well.
So if I'm gonna win, I'm gonna win. But if I already know I'm gonna lose, but I'm still gonna play the game, enjoy the ride. So I'll talk a whole bunch of smack, and then I'll be like, okay, we lost next.
So, okay, moving us forward. So obviously you started this business. You've obviously got a success model, which is about making a difference. Yeah. So where are you now? What's the project now?
Oh, it's a good question. So where am I now in my success model is really making a difference and doing it in a way that's even better for how I take care of myself.
Mm.
So I gloss over this and it's fun when I talk about it, but realistically speaking, but the severity of fibromyalgia is a disability that I have.
I know what fibro's like. I have a few friends with it, and it's like, and my friend describes it as every day she has 5 spoons.
Yes, it's a spoon theory. Yes, exactly.
And she has to decide where to put those 5 spoons.
Yes. And so
I want to thank you for giving me one of your spoons today.
You're welcome. And I'll tell you the truth. Today was a really hard day. I took a nap to show up for this.
Thank you.
So yeah, I mean, this morning I was like, oh my God, I have so much energy. I don't feel tired. That lasted all of 10 minutes. And that is the longest I have gone without feeling tired since March 25th, 2011. Mm-hmm. March 25th, 2011. That's the longest I've gone without being tired. And that was a car accident. And so now the next thing is I'm building the business in a way that allows me to get a lot more rest.
Mm-hmm.
So we still have our one-on-one like strategy to execution coaching and consulting model. And now we're doing more courses. So we've got a 5X referral program course, and there's group coaching along with that. So courses and group allow me more rest.
Yes.
Significantly. And the way I see a business is first you get money in the door. That's the referral program. Every human can get a referral. That's why it's not a LinkedIn marketing program. Like any human can get a referral because every human can talk to another human. You just have to get the skill set and the confidence.
Yeah.
Then once you do that, you either decide I want to stop growing, which some people do. They hit a point like they only want to make 100,000, 200,000, whatever. And they hit that point. If you want to keep growing after that, you've got to build a team. So then the next course is building your A team. I love building teams. I love building teams, which is another part of my success model. I told you I take advice from other people, and it's not a weakness. It's because I love pulling a bunch of people together to get things done. And so how do I run this business? And honestly, I have a lot of people doing a lot of things for me because they're motivated by me and they're learning and they look up to me and they will go above and beyond. So I have a team. Like when I first got into LinkedIn marketing, I was like, oh my God, I love this. I hired a video editor and he edited the video, wrote the draft of the copy, and then he wasn't that great. So I let him go. It was like a contract. I just didn't renew it. And then I got a team. I've never edited a video. I do a video a day on LinkedIn. Somebody else drafts the first draft of the copy based on the video. There's almost nothing we do in the company that I start from scratch anymore. So it's get money in the door, and then which is a referral program, and then build a team, and then teach people how to improve processes and understand the financials. Those four things, you can grow a business of any size that wants to make you happy, and you can organize it anyway, because it's just, if you don't want to spend a lot of time, you just train the team even more.
Yeah.
So that's my model for where our clients are going, mm-hmm. where our courses are going. And that's the same model that I use. Mm-hmm. I add on some other things like digital marketing and stuff that not everybody wants to, but that's because I like hiring teams. So most other people would be like, I have to do this myself. And I'd be like, no, I can just find someone, write down the steps from their head, and then find another person who wants to learn it, and then have them do it.
You have some good systems.
And that's, yeah, I mean, I read a ton, but the fastest way to learn is to ask a smart person.
It is, absolutely, yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
So we do that. We have manuals for everything. So it's like, if you ask me a question that I think will be asked twice, I just say, here's the answer, and then go right out the steps. And then have the third person.
Yeah, that's something I've never done, actually. I do, I'm not that much of a good an administrator. That's my problem. And it's like, and I recognize that technique of writing things down like that.
Yes.
Really valuable.
Well, and I'll challenge you even further. It's not about being a good administrator, because I have a friend who runs a $100 million company, and he's like, you're such a good COO. And I'm like, I just do this because I have to. It's also like, have 3 spoons when the world around you has 50.
Mm.
You have to get good. Like, packing for me is like, the things I have to pack for to take an overnight, I mean, that's like, whoo, it's like, she got a kid in there? I don't have diapers, but I got a foam roller, I got this pain relief thing, I got this sleep thing, and you're just like, dang, girl, you need a special pillow.
Mm.
Dang, right? So it's just, I mean, I had some strategic planning skills naturally, but I realized I had to be more effective and efficient than the rest of the world, because people don't look at you and say, hey, you have disability. They look at you and say, hey, that's a young, you know, great personality person. Like, if I were to go get groceries, I would be down for the day. So I have to figure out how to get food in a way that most other people don't, in a world that doesn't understand that.
Yeah.
So that created a lot of processes. And I'll tell you, the thing about the admin stuff, I love it. But you notice I didn't say I wrote those steps.
No, you didn't, actually. Good point. Very good point.
I review steps, or I give it to, if I really don't like those steps, I give it to another person to review. I don't write most of the things. Our model is teachers teaching teachers. So yeah. I teach you how to write steps. And if you really suck, we go through it together while you write them, while I watch you. And then I have you write the steps for writing steps. And the next time you ask me a dumb question, because you've already done this, I refer you to the manual for writing steps.
Fair enough. Everything has a manual.
Yeah. And if there's nothing, and then if you have a question and it's not there, I'll answer it. And then I have you put it there. Because if I put it there, one, I don't want to. And two, if I put it there, you didn't learn it. So if you had to write it, then you learned it. So the person who's learning it writes it.
Yes, that's the way forward, isn't it? Because then you learn the action of writing it means you learn it.
Exactly. And then a lot of people are not that good at communicating, so then if they have to, if I read it, they're like, oh well, it's just a bad, she has high standards, she's the boss, blah, 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 blah. But if I give it to another person to read and that person doesn't understand what you're saying, then all of a sudden you realize you're not a good communicator.
That's the format and process of mediation, what you just done there. So when you get people to try and get a mediation process going together, you get the person to say what the issue is and what's going, yes. what they experienced.
Yes.
And you get the other person to repeat back what they just heard.
Yes. Oh, actually, okay. So in that case, we do that as a rule. So when people first join, they think it's so annoying. So I'll say something to you and then I'll say, summarize it back. And they're like, I'm not an idiot. And I'm like, this is how we do it. Either you want, you summarize it back or you leave. Like, it's just, there's no option. And even in emails, we summarize back. So emails end with reply summarizing what you got. Verbal is summarize back. And once we get in the habit, you don't have to say it as much. But if you see very seasoned executives, you'll notice that they naturally paraphrase what people say to them. It's people who, when you're insecure or you don't have the attention to detail, you don't paraphrase back. But when you're senior and you do it, everyone thinks it's because you're so smart. When you're junior and you do it, you feel like it's because you're so dumb. But it's the same thing.
The point is, what you're doing is you're clarifying that the order or the conversation has been fully understood.
Yes, and it almost never is, because, I mean, if you go to like communication theory, like communication 101, there's a sender, the message goes through a channel, and there's the receiver.
Yeah.
On the other, to get to the other side, it's your biases, your what you heard, the technology went out, you distracted because there was a bird flying. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, that so often things get misheard. That's so common. Or something trips someone up, and then they.
Right. Even just now, the only way that I knew that you got me is because you said that. And now in a normal conversation, because you said that, we then move on to the next topic.
Yeah. So we do need to move on, and I'm enjoying this conversation, but I do need to push us along a little bit. Otherwise, yeah, we'll have a long, long podcast. And the trick in podcasts is to try and keep it all contained in a nice little package. So I have that question that I like to ask everybody. And that's the one question, which of course is an open question. It's this question is, what is the one question I haven't asked you?
Oh, yes. And you know, I thought this would be an easier question because I feel like I've shared so much.
You have actually been very
open. So I'm trying to think of, I can't think of anything that I, you know,
and you don't have to. I mean, it's there just so that you can actually stand on your soapbox and say something if you want to.
Yeah. And I would say, I mean, my soapbox is around finding your passion and realizing that that is what is going to wake you up. And no matter what it is.
So there's a question. There's a question coming out from that. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but there's a question. How would you say to someone, how would you tell someone to find their passion? What would your advice be?
That is a phenomenal question. I'm going to say it, and it's going to be like, you're going to be like, people are going to want me to give you a really simple answer.
There's no simple answer to this.
No, there are simple answers. They just don't work. Yeah, I mean, it's like, go do it. Nike has a slogan for it. It just doesn't, I mean, you just need more. You have to just go do the thing you think you're passionate about, and then watch yourself either fall in love or fall out of love. And so my example, I started, you know, doing business stuff when I was 10, didn't realize how deep it was for me. I got a business major, didn't realize how deep it was. I started doing organizational strategy, didn't realize how deep it was. But then I got a passion for helping people with personal finance. So on a vacation, I started a blog, and every time I had a day off, I was doing something to help people with personal finance. I was basically just working, and I thought that was my passion, and that was giving me my contribution to the world, and I thought that's what I loved. And then when I went full on, I realized I was bored. I was totally bored with it. I had helped 5,000 people invest $9 million. I trained people. Yeah, I'd spoken from stages of 1,500 people. I'd spoken after a general. I mean, and as a part-time thing, it was very exciting. But once I went all in, I realized I was bored. You could wake me up out of dead sleep and I could tell you the fees and your Vanguard target date fund and what you should use. And it was like,
yes. Went over my, for the benefit of the listeners, that went over my head.
And so I realized I was bored, and it was because I went all in that I was able, if I had never gone all in, I would have always thought that was my passion, because nothing would have proved it wrong. Yeah. So when I went all in and I was just like, but this is really boring. And I was like, what is not boring? Business. And then I was like, okay, let's try that. And I was like, well, you know, I've been doing this business strategy stuff for a while. Let me try selling that work. And that was super interesting. And then people had all these emotional issues that were the reasons their businesses weren't growing, which I knew. And now because of my own company, I could deal with it. And I love personal development. Like clients crying on the phone with me. That's normal. Husbands, wives telling me they think about getting divorced and that's why they don't have good communication. that's normal stuff. We'll still raise your, we'll raise your revenue and we'll fix that too, right? So the point is, if you want to know what you're passionate about, go do what it is you think you're passionate about, and then you'll fall out of love with it, or you'll fall more in love with it. And it was like, it's like you wake up one day and you realize your best friend's your true love. And that's what it was like for me with realizing entrepreneurship. It had always been there. It had always been consistent. And I kind of took it for granted. And now I'm like, it's entrepreneurship. It's getting deep, personal, meaningful conversations, which you could see from just how I talk, and pushing the boundaries of both of those things in terms of growth. So if you're trying to figure out where your passion is, you don't just wake up one day like it just like a lightning bolt. You show up, you go do what you think it is. And then if it stops feeling right, you have the confidence to stop and go do something else. And it's a thing you never fall out of love with.
I love that sense of, and I've heard it from a variety of places, that actually passion never hits you like a light, like a bolt of lightning. Passion is that little silent voice that goes,
yeah,
and it's like a little flame that you have to fan and kind of like bring to life.
Listen, it's that flame that said that it's okay to keep spending. You actually hate running an Airbnb and you hate this whole experience, but there's some reason that you're doing it because you're trying to learn something and nobody else in your life understands. There's only one person who doesn't think it's crazy, so only talk to them. But for some reason, you like the idea of starting these businesses. And so I just kept doing it. And so it's that little flame and meditation helps, getting centered helps, whatever helps, because the world is going to tell you not to do it. I mean, the world's going to tell you not to do basically everything anyway. But the one that matters is the passion one. And when the voice is silent like this, and the world sounds like, that's a dumb idea, that doesn't make enough money, you work too hard to start that way, your boyfriend thinks it's dumb, your mom thinks it's dumb, I mean, whoever, it's hard to listen to that still, quiet voice that is the voice. And earlier when I talked about getting more connected with who I am, it's actually, I hear that voice all day, every day now. And I make decisions on an hourly basis based on that voice. That I asked, I said when I was not feeling very well today, do I need to be in this podcast? And the voice said yes.
Thank you.
That's you're welcome. And I say that to say that's the level of I'm connected with that voice in hour by hour decision making.
Well, thank you so much for turning up here, because I've enjoyed our conversation immensely. You are very inspiring to listen to, and I'm really enjoying this conversation. Here is your opportunity to tell us more about what you do, and obviously links and bits and pieces if you need them. So who are you looking for? Who do you help?
Well, I would love to help you if you are a coach, you're an advisor, like a marketing, like a financial advisor, insurance advisor, digital marketing, or a consultant, and you want to grow your business. So you heard me talk about some of the things that, you know, I do within my team. And our outcome is to help you grow your business so you've got the money that you want and you've got the fun and the fulfillment that you want. So we make it super easy and we're with you along the way. And I'm this real every day with you. I'll be right there with you when you're struggling. I'll show you the easy path. And then when you feel stuck, I'll be right there with you emotionally. So if you're a coach, if your friend's a coach, an advisor, a marketing agency person, go to yvetteowo.com/start. And so that's just my first name, last name, .com/start.
That's perfect. All those links and all your social stuff will be on the podcast's details, so people can pick it up from there. I do envy people that can put have their name as a .com. If you put Paul Harvey in the internet, you get the newscaster.
Oh, yes, it does help. There's nobody else with my name.
No. There's a few Paul Harveys about, but he's the most famous.
Yeah, you might have to change your name.
I think I'll stick with this one. So we are coming to the end of our time together, and this is the last question I ask everybody, and it's the big question that I think, because I think if you have answers to the questions that we've said on this podcast, if you know where your passion is, if you know what your success model is, and you have an answer to this question, you will have a good life. So okay. the question is, what is
everyone? He just told me if I don't have an answer, I don't have a good life.
No, I know. I know. I just set you up here. Absolutely. Because I'm expecting good things from you. But I think what I'm getting at here is, you know, we come on this planet as animals. We're born as an animal, and only humans have the arrogance to think we have a purpose on here other than just to eat, chip, sleep, die. You know, we think we have a purpose, and there's a greater purpose. Now, for some people, I'm not going to go any further. Where are you in this? Where do you sit on this idea that life has a meaning?
That's beautiful. I think life has a meaning, and I haven't always thought that. So I think it's really your choice. But at the end of the day, whether or not you think life has a meaning has the biggest impact on you. Mm. So believing that life has a meaning makes me happier than not believing that life has a meaning. So I choose to believe things that make me happy. Some people might think that's crazy. Well, you know what? If you believe in God, you believe in somebody you've never seen came out and touched you, and you know, and if you believe in Jesus and he grew up in the Middle East, but he was blonde and blue-eyed. I don't know how that happened, right? Like, clearly you believe in non-logical things. It's just that your non-logical thing is quite popular. So I do believe life has a meaning. And I also believe that you create the meaning. Yeah. So there's probably something inside of me that is destined to be experienced through business, right? Mm. But realistically speaking, if I had to experience it through education, I might have found a different way. For some reason, I lived in a world where, like, you know, there was absolutely no way I could do this. Like, you know, like the 1950s as a woman, it's not that long ago. Or actually, actually as a person of color, because if I was doing well financially in the 1950s, I probably would have been hung. So probably would have had a cap there. So go back to your original question. Which one was it again?
What is the meaning of life for you?
I think you create the meaning of your life.
Yeah.
And it's the choices that we make every single day, and it's being intentional. So if you don't choose a meaning in your life, it still has one. Like, if you don't choose a meaning and you're a jerk, your life is a lesson to other people not to be a jerk. But so if you don't choose one, it still has one.
I would expect, has your meaning shifted since you developed Fibro?
Has my meaning? I don't think my meaning has shifted. I think what has happened is I know it more.
Mm.
So it's not the shifting of the meaning in the sense that, like, the practicalities of it, like.
But when every day is an effort, you've got to may have a meaning. You've got to have a bloody good reason for doing it.
Yeah, more clarity around it, right? And just recognizing that. And the more I listen to it, the more I recognize most people aren't going to support most things that you want to do. Mm. And so it's the clarity and this, and like I talked about, that still voice being a daily, an hour by hour, even decision maker for me. So the meaning hasn't changed. I still want to help lots of people like I did when I was 9. I still want to do it through business when I was 10. Now I don't really want to sell things door to door. I want my sales team to sell things door to door. So I'm actively training a sales team. But the bigger meaning has stayed the same. What Fibro, and I think people get when they have not exactly the same children, whenever you have something that creates a lot of restriction in your life and after having a life with very little restriction, I think you either get depressed, which I've also been there, and you find truth. Mm. And that truth keeps you clear and centered. Despite like I lived in this building that had glass doors and it was so heavy, I had a hard time getting into the building where I lived. And because I am not a little old lady, people do not think she needs help. Mm. They might just think she's just standing in front of the door for a very long time. Not she's resting so she can push the door open, right? And so I had to have a clear reason if I was going to leave the house, because I knew I had to deal with that. And so it just gave me more truth and more clarity and more, just realizing that I have to listen to my voice. Mm-hmm. And it also showed me how often other people are insanely wrong. Like, people would say things like, oh, you know, I also have to forget things sometimes. It's just aging. And I'm like, no, it's not. This isn't actually helpful. You just feel uncomfortable now because I told you about this. Mm. So now you're saying words to make yourself feel more comfortable. And I'm this isn't helpful for me. I'm just going to end this conversation really politely and never talk to you about this again. But, and so it's just that, it gives me that clarity. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for our time together. And thank you for lending me one of your spoons. It's been a, it's been a lovely time to talk to you. And you know, maybe we will talk again sometime. And
maybe. This is quite pleasurable.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Yvette Owo. And what a powerhouse of a woman she is. She really gets stuff done. If you would like to connect with Yvette, you can find her at yvetteowo.com, on Facebook and on LinkedIn. And the details for those will be on the podcast page as usual. So how do you get stuff done? Yvette has developed a system and a process, and she has inbuilt accountability. But for us mortals, how do we do it? If you think you need some help to get stuff done, where do you go? So let me tell you how I do it. I use a classic coaching model to break down the problem. I look at my resistances to it, and then I pick the best solution and I set a deadline to get there. And then I use an accountability partner to share my decisions and help me to hold it. Now I can help you get there by taking you through the above process and being your accountability buddy. It's called Turbo Coaching, and the full details can be found on the podcast website, Life, Passion and Business. So that is a wrap for this week. So thank you so much for your time and attention, and I will catch you later.